Parenting Junkie.
Hey, welcome back to the Parenting Junkie, the place to go to love parenting and for parenting from love. Today, I want to talk to you guys about the very popular concept of grit. Grit has hit the headlines so often in recent years, and how to create gritty kids is a question that most parents ask themselves. So what does gritty really mean? Well, gritty means that you have some kind of passion and interest and that you sustain it over a very long amount of time, so over years, and that you invest a lot of energy in it and overcome obstacles along the way. So gritty kids are able to be persistent and not quit at the first time of any challenge. Now, I personally believe that it's often a really good idea to quit, and that it's often really important not to, and finding that balance is very challenging for ourselves, and how to encourage grittiness in our kids is obviously a real question. But luckily, Angela Duckworth has us covered on that front, because she's written a really fantastic book about what grit is and how to cultivate it. So I'm going to cut to the chase about what tips I really got as a parent from this book, but I strongly urge you to watch her TED Talk and to read her research in her book. It's riveting stuff. So what is the bottom line on how she says that we can encourage grit in our kids? When parents are authoritative, not to be confused with authoritarian, authoritative parents are wise parents. They are parents that are both supportive and warm, and also have high demands and high expectations of their children. So they demand a lot, they ask for a lot, they expect a lot, but they do that with a lot of love and support and understanding. Then parents have the ultimate relationship with their child to encourage their children to want to emulate and collaborate with their parents. And when children want to emulate their parents, then you've created a scenario where gritty parents create gritty children, because your children are learning from you. Now, there are some more specific tactics rather than just being supportive and warm and having high expectations. The specific tactics that you might want to employ that Angela Duckworth uses with her own children is something called the hard thing rule. What is the hard thing rule? Well, she explains that in her family, everyone, including the adults, has to pick one hard thing that they are focused on and that they are going to do routinely. So either daily or weekly. It could be a ballet class, a music class, it could be a certain math course, it could be a career goal that you're setting yourself as an adult, or working out at the gym. Whatever it is for you as a parent and for your child, it's something that they need to do until there is a natural stop. Okay, until the season is over, until the year is over, until tuition is paid. In other words, it is not something that they can quit just because they had a hard day. And I think that this is the point that she is trying to teach us, is that we should let our children quit when they're not interested in something. Because to be gritty, you have to have an intense passion for something. But in order to develop that passion over a long amount of time, and in order to develop the grittiness it takes to overcome obstacles, you can't quit just when the going gets rough. You can't quit something that you are passionate about, that you do love, just because it's challenging. So you need to learn that, yes, your interests are important, your choices are important, and that's why you can choose your hard thing. It has to be something you love and are interested in, but also that you must sustain it at least until there is a natural pause. When her kids hit high school, however, she encourages them to commit to their hard thing for at least 2 years, because she says committing to something and following through on something for 2 years is an indicator for much heightened grittiness in the future. So is grit something that you're interested in developing in your children or in your own self? And if so, how do you do it? What are your tips for making sure that our children choose what they're passionate about and do things that they love and that they want to do, but also don't run and quit the first time the going gets rough? I'd love to hear your tips in the comments over on theparentingjunkie.com. And whilst you're there, sign up for email updates so you're sure never to miss an episode. And if you want to ensure that your kids are truly gritty, then subscribe to the channel here on YouTube. Keep on loving parenting and parenting from love, because your kids need you almost as much as you need them. Goodbye.
The Parenting Junkie.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Hi, everyone. Hello, Danilo. Welcome. So good.
Thank you.
Everyone, I'm very, very excited to be hosting Danilo Cuella, who is an unschooling, peaceful parent of a six-year-old boy and a four-year-old girl, a podcaster, a writer, a blogger. And Danilo, you write and create content and teach us all about philosophy, morality, economics, free market, volunteerism, unschooling, peaceful parenting. And I'm going to direct everyone to Danilo's website, which is peacefulanarchism.com, where you can suck up all of that wisdom. And Danilo is also a very good friend of mine. We've met at a few homeschool meetups, and our kids love to play together. And as of such, I know, I happen to know behind the scenes that you're also an avid chess player, an amateur, you call yourself, a piano player, and a philosopher. Welcome, Danilo.
Thank you very much for having me. We met just a couple months ago, and I found out you do content yourself relating to peaceful parenting and homeschooling and unschooling. And immediately, you know, we're like, what? Really? Serious? So immediate connection. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to pound you with some questions. Okay. So the first one is, how did you come to home education?
When my son was born in 2010, we didn't really know much about homeschooling. My wife bought some books. One of them was The Continuum Concept. I'm not sure if these books are more like homeschooling or is it peaceful parenting. I mean, I get the two confused sometimes. But John, what is it? John Holt. Right? And Peter Gray, those kind of things. And also, I got some John Taylor Gatto books. And I was reading about him, and so just learning about the power of inspiring children and encouraging them to follow their passions and a real respect for their desires of what they want to learn, what they're interested in, what they're passionate about, and I think from reading about that literature, I gained a deep respect for children and what they want to do. So that's probably a major reason.
That's beautiful. I love those books as well. They've been very inspiring to me. So as you know, your children are already reaching the ages of, you know, classical school, traditional school. And as they kind of reach those ages, it's very typical for homeschoolers or unschoolers to feel that stress of like what other children are learning, you know, in school, and how our children are learning so many things, but not necessarily the things that are going on in school. So do you have, as a family, do you have an educational agenda? Like, do you have some things that you know for sure that you want your children to learn? And how will you facilitate that? How will you, if at all, make sure they hit those milestones and learn those things?
Yeah, that's it's one point of contention between me and my wife, because I'm so much more attracted to the complete unstructured learning, and she's a little bit more it's difficult for her to let go of some of the structure that she was brought up. My wife grew up in communist Romania, and so you can imagine the type of structure she had as compared to us. So so it's very difficult for her to let go, but slowly she came to realize how it's just so much more beautiful to allow children the freedom to pursue, you know, what they want to pursue. And so I don't really have a curriculum. My wife, you know, she encourages, like, you know, workbooks, and, you know, we go over, you know, the alphabet, and I read them books, and, you know, they know a little bit of writing, a little bit of word recognition. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents get kind of frightened when, you know, your child is not at a particular level, let's say especially reading, mm-hmm. and writing, as compared to other children at that level. And so, you know, there's always this comparison that goes on. And I think my wife tends to do a lot of that as well. You know, our children are reading yet. You know, they're not doing this by this age, you know. And I think that kind of comparison is pretty crippling, you know, when you're always comparing your children or yourself to other people and their children. And you can't, you know, because to me, the whole philosophy of unschooling is understanding that all children are unique. So how can you really compare one child to another child? You know, we all are born different backgrounds, different strengths, different weaknesses, right? Different handicaps. So you cannot really compare one child to the other, because there's so many factors that go into how quickly or how slowly a child learns. Mm-hmm. So I think it's thoroughly destructive to make those comparisons, and I try really hard not to, and I think sometimes my wife gets sucked into it, but, you know, I think we have to just understand and respect our children's unique nature, and just help them to pursue and discover what they're actually interested in, because I don't know what they're interested in, but hopefully we can expose them to different things and different experiences. And, you know, like I met you at a homeschooling farm, and that was awesome, and that was an awesome experience. So different things like that, you know, just to hopefully kindle their love of learning. I think that's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, beautiful. So if you were speaking to someone who, you know, who's considering home education, what are some key lessons about home education that you've learned and that you wish you knew when your oldest was just a toddler a few years ago? What are some things that you've learned over the last few years that other people might benefit from?
So I think one of the things that people often confuse when we say homeschooling, that's one of the reasons I don't like the word homeschooling. Home education is good. Mm-hmm. Unschooling is a really good term. But the word schooling confuses a lot of people, right? Because they think that the same exact thing that you're doing in school, you do at home.
Right.
Like we're just locking our kids in the room and throwing them books and papers, right, and say, do that.
Which, you know, I mean, some homeschoolers do it that way, right? Some people.
Well, some do. Yeah. Right. Right. Some do. Yeah, you're right. There is a range.
Right.
But I guess because maybe we do more of the unschooling. So we are in the house, but we're also outside the house a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big variety. And so, yeah. So the first thing is that's what people think of it when you say homeschooling is you know, exactly the same as at home, and that's the first misnomer for the way we do it anyway. So that's one thing.
So just the fact, yeah, just telling people like that unschooling in particular really doesn't mean sitting down with a book at the kitchen table. Maybe give us some examples, like what does your week look like? What does your day look like? Give us an example of how that does manifest.
All right. So for Mondays, right, we have swim lessons, mm-hmm. and we go do that. And that's awesome. They love it. And, you know, they're learning how to swim, even though it's winter, they still love it. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesdays we have gymnastics and ballet. My daughter loves ballet. She's 4 years old. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loves it. She started ballet when she was three. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh, that's another thing that's kind of interesting, is that I think a lot of parents, they approach parenting in general by saying, you're going to do this, mm-hmm. for this many years, I don't care if you like it or not, you're going to do it. Like whatever, karate or an instrument or ballet, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to do it, you know? And I remember in one of your videos, you talked about grit, right? And saying to your children, but I guess that's a little bit different because in that video, I think you were saying where you and the child agree or the child wants to do it, but then they back out later saying, I don't want to do it anymore. Right. And then you say, well, but why don't you just do a little more and just see if you really like it, and then you can stop. So maybe it's different. Right? Am I right with that?
Yeah, you are. You're talking about Angela Duckworth's research about grit and what she recommends to parents, which I think is a good, to me, it seems like a good recommendation. Exactly as you say, children have to choose what they're interested in. There's no point developing grit in something that you're not interested in. You won't be gritty. Right? If you said, I want to learn an instrument, take ballet, whatever it is, then making some kind of cutoff that you have to at least finish the season that I've paid for, or you have to at least, I don't know, use up the materials that we've bought. Because what happens in any arena of life, and I think sometimes in unschooling we can forget this, is that there are obstacles that you have to overcome. And even if we're free and if we're liberated and if we're going only after our own interests, I think we have to learn that grittiness of overcoming those obstacles. And so that's what her recommendation was, that once your child's chosen something, and she wasn't talking about very young children. I mean, she was talking about like 6-year-olds, like elementary age children choosing one thing and sticking with it for a year or a season. And then once they're teenagers, expecting them to stick with it for 2 years. So building up that. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you think about that. But.
So I don't think I have a problem with that because, I mean, my kids don't, they don't seem like they quit easily. Like my daughter, she's been doing ballet now for a year and a half. And when we started, she was doing just once a week. And then she was so excited to go each week. My wife's like, why don't we sign her up for a second time? Because she seems like she's so excited.
Yeah.
And when we told the ballet teacher, she was confused. She's like, what? But she's only 3. Like, they only come once a week. And but she really wants to come again. So she was the only 3-year-old that came twice a week, which is very interesting. And this woman like has been around for a long time. I don't know, like 20 years, 25 years. And she's like, she's never seen a 3-year-old so excited and wanting to go. And so, yeah, so my daughter was
following her passion.
I don't know. We'll see. But see, she loves it right now. And the gymnastics, they also love that. There's no feeling of wanting to quit that. The swimming, they love that. Like they make it really fun over there. It's really cool with that. And yeah, so that's Monday, Tuesday. And then Wednesday, usually we go out and we meet up with a group of, we call it a forest play group. And, I mean, now it's winter, it's kind of died down. Like my kids don't really like the cold, so we stayed in. But during the, spring, summer, fall, we're out all the time. In the woods, the kids can play, all of us homeschooling, unschooling families, we bring food, cook outdoors, make a fire, one of the women has an outdoor stove. So, it's really beautiful bonding time for us, for the parents and for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that. And then Thursday we go to another place for, classes on science and math, which again, they're geared more towards homeschoolers and they really make it very interesting. The kids love that as well. It's funny that I think a lot of homeschoolers fear that their kids are going to be home too much, right? And so they're like, what are we going to do? We need to find things for the kids to do. But now it seems like a lot of people in our group, their fear is like, maybe we're doing too much. And maybe we need to give our kids a break because And the kids sometimes complain, we always go out. Why don't we stay home today? Right. So we got to, find a balance and respect that as well, because that's definitely important. But yeah, so there's no scarcity of interaction outside of the home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a major myth that is debunked with the way we do it is, you know, we're always out and about, very active. And I think you're the same way, right?
Mm.
Pretty similar. So,
I don't remember the last time we spent a whole day at home. It doesn't happen. I mean, maybe, like maybe Saturday, do you know what I mean? Like we are always out. Yeah. At least once a day.
Right. Right.
Then, I mean, look, we're also lucky to live in an area of the world where homeschooling and unschooling is legal and supported, and there are plenty of meetups and museums and playgroups and all these different things that you can do. So in that sense, it's we're really, really blessed.
Yeah, yeah, and we recently moved to New Jersey, and one of the major factors for choosing New Jersey is because of the very relaxed homeschooling regulations, and that's caused a lot of homeschooling groups to spring up. And so there's a lot of activities for homeschoolers and unschoolers to get together and do meetups and go to museums, go to parks, do hikes, do so many different things. And there's never a scarcity of things to do. You know, that's never the fear. It's just, it comes down to finding the time sometimes.
Right, finding the balance. Okay, fantastic. I want to ask you my next question. So do you find that you get enough time alone for your own work and projects? And if so, how? I know that it's, you know, you're the primary homeschool parent. Your wife works outside of the home. So when do you, you know, first of all, does it sometimes drive you crazy to be with your kids all day? Like, do they sometimes just annoy the hell out of you? And if not, how?
Yeah.
And, you know, how do you get some alone time and some time to work on the things that are meaningful to you, or to work out, or to be with friends, or time that is not with children?
Yeah, yeah. So ever since, was it 2.5 years ago? Yeah, I've been the stay-at-home homeschooling / unschooling father of my kids. My wife works from home. And one of the reasons why we go out so much is because she works from home. She wants us to be out so she can be free and, or she can have quiet in the house. It's so hard to concentrate when the kids are screaming, you know, kids are screaming and running around. But what was the last part of the question? Sorry.
If you yourself get time without your children,
right.
And how you do that?
Yeah, yeah, because I also have my website and my videos, my interviews and all that writing I do. And I mean, the way I find time, really, I wake up early in the morning, like 5 o'clock. Like that's everybody's sleeping. I'm like, excellent. This is my creative time. And you know, some people have told me that I'm very, like people who I meet up with, right? They say that I'm very relaxed. Like I am, according to my friends, the picture of the relaxed parent of, you know, I don't raise my voice. I mean, it's funny because I think I do, and my wife thinks I do too much. Too much. But the people around me, they say I don't get angry at all, which is very interesting. but yeah, I think that I'm able to, you know, talk to my kids in a way that, you know, not really like striking fear into them, but, you know, having them understand various things. And so we, you know, we developed a great relationship, outdoors too. You know, I think my kids are very, very easy to talk to in terms of, with other people, like other kids, other adults even, because they don't really recognize, authority figures because they have not been in school. So that's one of the interesting things. And you know what's interesting? Let me just say this. oftentimes when we come around, you know, me and my kids, people smile a lot, right? They just smile. And I feel like when children are given the freedom to just be and to just play, to just, you know, they understand, okay, we have freedom, and I think their happiness is reflected, or the freedom it produces this happiness, and people see that, and it makes people's lives, you know, it uplifts people, right? Because you know, one of the things that really hurts me is when I see, kids that are so obedient to their parents and quiet and taciturn and mm-hmm. don't speak out of line, don't talk back and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, those kind of kids, they don't necessarily, I don't see that they get the same kind of reaction from other adults. Mm-hmm. So I think adults can recognize when children are being genuine and sincere. And I think that's a very interesting observation that I made. People, for their own kids, most, some people will say, I want, obedience. You have to respect me, respect my authority. But then when they see other kids that are more free, they're like, oh, isn't that so beautiful? Look at that. I find that an interesting contradiction.
I find it absolutely amazing that you don't yell at your kids. I don't know anyone who doesn't yell at their kids. But not, I don't mean people who don't want to yell at their kids. I know a lot of people who don't want to yell at their kids, but including myself, I'm very committed to not yelling, and yet I still will get triggered several times a week, find myself enraged, yelling, even though I preach this stuff, I teach it, I read it, I learn it, I'm an eternal student of peaceful parenting, but I will fall into that pit if I haven't gotten enough sleep, if I haven't gotten enough alone time, if I'm irritated or worried or stressed about anything, et cetera, I will, lose my cool. And I'm a relatively relaxed person, like I'm quite a Zen person. So that's just amazing to me. Is that true? Do you really never, completely lose your shizzles?
I'm the type of person that I don't get mad. I don't get mad easily at all. I've been told that by many people, like my wife's family. They say, "Are you human? Do you have emotions? Do you get worried about anything?" I don't get, like, when you say shout or yell, like if my kids are far away, I'll shout and call them. That's not considered shouting.
I mean angry. I mean losing temper. You don't even have to be shouting. Just saying mean things or.
I guess not. Wow. And what's interesting is that so I'm with my kids all the time, right? And I don't know, maybe you can relate to this, that the parent who's not with their kids for most of the day has the shortest fuse, right? They're like, why is this kid listening to me? And I'm like, that's what he does. I don't let it get to me.
It's so true, because I often tell people say to me, how can you be with your kids so much of the time? And I say to them, it gets easier the more you're with them. It's like, it's the opposite. When you're with them only short amounts of time in the day and whatever, that's a choice that many people have to make, and that's fine. It's actually harder to be with kids just in small spurts, I think, because you don't just feel their rhythm so intuitively, and you get so attuned, and you get so used to it, and you find your rapport, and you can't be losing your patience every single minute of the day. You just get patient, you know your kids well, and I don't know, I just find the more you do it, the easier it gets. I think that's an important thing for people to know about homeschooling and unschooling, is that get used to that. Like, people are always like, you go to the supermarket with all three of your children, that sounds like my worst nightmare. I'm like, would you do that every Tuesday?
One thing I wanted to mention, you reminded me of, is you said, even though I'm a I'm a proponent of peaceful parenting and empathy and reasoning with my kids and all this, I still get mad and triggered. And that's a very good point, because it illustrates that we are imperfect human beings. We have defects, right? Even though we talk about this philosophy, and me, I talk about morality and economics and philosophy and principles. Still, we are imperfect human beings, and that's okay. It just means that we're striving to be better. And I think that's what's important. If you can recognize that you are imperfect, and then to try to improve constantly on that, I think that's the most humble and modest approach you can have, because all too often people think that, there's only one way to parent, and this is the way, and I know the right way, just listen to me and you'll be fine. No, it's not like that. There's not one way to raise all children. because all children are unique. All children have different have different needs. So once you become so stoic and hardened to that, and you're not, you know, inflexible, and you're not willing to give based on the individual needs of your children, then you will encounter many more difficulties. And that, I think, is much more exhausting. To be so rigid with your parenting, it's much more exhausting than it is to try to cater to your children and try to figure out and reason with them and ask them questions. You know, why are you feeling like this? You know, let's talk about this. You know, I think I think it's so much more exhausting. That's how I see some parents, like, at the end of the day, they're like, oh, I'm so tired of parenting. It's so exhausting. And I think it's because, you know, trying to lay down punishment, trying to yell and scream over them, and, you know, don't talk over me, and, you know, I'm your mother, and all this stuff. That's exhausting. So, yeah, that's you reminded me of that.
I agree. Yeah, trying to control other people. It's like I always call it just a fast route to suffering, like, for everyone, you know. Right. But then, do you ever see, you know, certain behaviors in your children or certain attributes that you're like, oh, this is not what I want my kids to be doing. This is not how I want my kids to be behaving. I'm not proud of this. You know, do you ever feel that way?
Yeah, my daughter, 4 years old, she's pretty mature for that, her age. I don't know if it's because she's a girl, but she can control my son. Who's old, 2 years older, and you know, she controls him by, you know, emotionally. You know, she's shorter, she's smaller, but she's got an intense temper, right? And she really screams loudly when she's not happy. And you know, people who we've been with, you know, their kids sometimes say, "Oh, she, look at her, she's so spoiled." But you know, she's got things that she's going through, and you know, maybe that's handed down. Maybe that's in genetics. I don't know. But yeah, so she's got a real controlling nature. And even like, when we're with the other homeschooling kids, you know, a bunch of boys and girls, and Marcus and Serena, they often say, my kids, they often say, Serena, my daughter, is the leader of the girls. Like, it's just understood. My daughter is the leader of the girls,
right?
And she leads. And even though there's other kids that are taller and older, like, she doesn't like people or other girls not following her. So it's interesting. You know, so I think she requires a little bit more talking to. And you know, I'm constantly, like, once she's screaming and yelling at the top of her lungs, you know, I'm not going to try to compete with that. I'm not going to scream and overpower her, because that's just going to make her worse, right? So I think there's a point, like, when she gets angry slowly, and you see the emotion building, right? The tension building, and you have a short period where you can diffuse that with reason, and you try, and then once it gets past that, it's like, it was compared to a nerve cell firing. Like, after the stimulus gets past the threshold, it has to continue the whole action potential until it goes back to resting phase.
That's how tantrums work. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't get bothered. It doesn't matter where I am. Like she had one last night. We were in a grocery store, a big grocery department store.
Classic.
And she wanted lipstick. She wanted my lipstick. I said no. I called my wife. She said no. And so basically screaming, shouting, tantrum. And so all I do is I say, all right. Just let me know when you're done. Okay. I'll be right here. Like, what else can you do, you know? I'm not going to physically restrain her, pick her up. What am I going to do, close her mouth? You know, you can't do anything. So you just kind of let it roll out, and eventually she's finished expressing herself. So that's one thing that is going to be difficult for her, I think, is learning to manage her emotions. But I think, you know, with time, that's something that you learn with time. And, you know, my son does not have that problem at all. He's kind of like me. He doesn't really get mad at much. It takes a lot for him to get mad. Mm. So we're very similar. You could probably say my daughter's like my wife in a sense. although she wouldn't like to admit it, but I think that's one difficulty that she has. You know, we're constantly trying to talk to her and, you know, trying to reason with her and trying to say that, you know, it's okay. It's okay if he's looking at you. You know, you don't have to scream because he's looking at you. He's not hurting you. He's just looking at you. So yeah, she can be a little controlled.
That's a challenge. A lot of parents have that temperament, right? That's almost, I would say, nothing to do with school, or not school. But yeah, it just sounds like you're so patient and forgiving and you take, I love that you said that's something that you learn with time, because I think it's so hard as parents to take that long-term view and understand child development, that like you don't have literally the cognitive capacity at that age to control those emotions. It's something that you learn through the empathy again and again and again over the years. So that's beautiful. And we have to close up. We have about two more minutes. So just, do you have any thoughts? Okay, someone is considering homeschooling and unschooling. They're really not sure. It costs a lot of money, right? They probably have to give up a salary maybe to do this or change jobs to do this. And, you know, what is kind of your pitch for why someone should choose unschooling? You got 2 minutes.
I mean, when I'm talking to somebody who's, let's say, has their kids in public school or is considering doing that, mm-hmm. one of the things is I say, reflect on your own history. How was your public school experience? Did you enjoy it? What parts of it did you not enjoy? very few people, I have to say, tell me, I loved my public school experience. And so when they say they do not, I say, now, if you don't, how can you, with a good conscience, send your own flesh and blood children to the same very institution that you did not enjoy? I can't do that. I definitely cannot do that. The things that I learned that I think were valuable in public school are things that I learned outside of public school on my own because I was interested in them, not because I was forced to memorize them. That's one thing that I would focus on, is ask people, what's your experience, you know? Because I think, you know, everybody has their own view about children and, you know, how children should be raised. But, you know, I try to take a more personalized approach and, you know, talk about the specific person that I'm talking to and try to connect with them that way. So,
right.
Yeah.
Danilo, thank you so much. You're such an inspiring parent. Seriously, I've seen you in action, and it's a beautiful thing to see your bond between you and your kids and how much flow and ease and patience and just humanity, just like relationships. It's really inspiring. I find you a very, very inspiring parent. And I love that you just unschool with such, without doubts, without hesitation, just with such trust. Like when I see you, I just see trust. And I think that's a really, your children are very, very lucky.
I'd say the same way about your parenting. I'm really inspired when I came across your channel and your videos, and I'm so happy I did that we met. And
Thank you so
made
so
a great friend.
Everyone check out Peaceful Anarchism so you can get more of Danilo's wisdom. And thank you so, so much for being here, Danilo.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this content and would like to see more of it, please feel free to donate and help me interview other fascinating people. You can do so through Patreon. That's patreon.com/peacefulanarchism to help me out. $1 a show is all I ask. If you feel so inclined to donate more, please feel free. It will only assist me in spreading the message of freedom and volunteerism that much farther and that much more efficiently. You can also donate to my Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is in the description to my videos, as well as on my website, peacefulanarchism.com. And while you're on my site, there's a donate button to donate through PayPal. If you prefer to donate through PayPal, you can do so with that. But Patreon is a little bit easier for content creators, as you can set up a recurring donation if you so desire. Also, while you're on my website, peacefulanarchism.com, please feel free to sign up, enter your email address, sign up for my newsletter, and you'll receive updates every time I post something, a video or an interview. I do not send out any spam. Or you can also follow me on Facebook under facebook.com/peacefulanarchism or facebook.com/Danilo Cuellar 3, I believe. Danilo Cuellar 3. So either one of those methods, if you are able to donate, I would be most appreciative. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have a magnificent day.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.